The U.S. Treasury Secretary says that robots won't take human jobs for about 100 years. Meanwhile, in Silicon Valley, really, robots are taking human jobs. Also, some hackers are holding ransom iTunes passwords in exchange for iTunes gift cards. Yep, that's happening. And Sam from Ars Technica is joining us to talk about VR and South by Southwest, DuckTales, Power Rangers, all that and more in the latest episode of Tech News Today.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Tech News Today, episode 1732, recorded Friday, March 24th, 2017.
This episode of Tech News Today is brought to you by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. When it comes to the big decision of choosing a mortgage lender, work with one who has your best interest in mind. Use Rocket Mortgage for a transparent, trustworthy home loan process that's completely online at quickenloans.com/TNT. Welcome to Tech News Today. This is the show where we enjoy telling you what you need to know about technology, or what we think you need to know. I'm Megan Maroney.
I'm Nathan Olivares Styles. And yes, we are going to tell you the biggest tech news of the day, the stuff that we think is the most important for sure. And we're going to start off with, well, whether or not robots and artificial intelligence will someday take your job. United States Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin projects that it's not a question that we're going to have to answer for, oh, maybe a century or so. In an interview with the news website Axios, Mnuchin said, quote, "It's not even on our radar screen, 50 to 100 more years away." He also said, "I'm not worried at all. In fact, I'm optimistic." Honestly, reading this left me a bit dumbfounded here. Given that President Trump ran on a promise of bringing back manufacturing jobs to the United States, and that most manufacturing plants, from electronics to cars to clothes, rely on robots paired with humans, this really did kind of surprise me. And I wonder, Megan, what do you think here? Do we really have a century before robots are a threat to many, many, many jobs?
No. I think we probably have about, 5 minutes.
Yeah.
I think that it is, I just don't understand how you can say something like that. It's a tough topic to talk about. Whatever can be automated will be automated. I believe that. Most people believe that. Eventually, it will be a good thing for many people. Mm-hmm, it will be a really bad thing for a lot of people.
Yeah, there's going to be some growing pains, right?
As there have always been. I mean, we're moving into an information society. You know, we came from an industrial society. Before that, we were agrarian society. Change happens.
Yeah, it seems almost as though he's not paying attention to, like, the robots replacing people in the checkout line at the grocery store, or ATMs in place of, like, bank tellers, or even, you know, the looming, issue of self-driving cars replacing, like, Uber and Lyft and taxi cab drivers. I mean, there's so many examples in everyday life for every socioeconomic strata. I don't know how you could not run into this and see this being so far off, which makes me wonder if he's just, like, supremely disconnected, or if he's just, like, lying or something. I'm not quite sure.
Did he really? It's so funny that the quote is, "It's not even on our radar screen." Like, he's using technology.
Yeah. to talk about this issue. Yeah. Well, it should. Steve, if you're watching this show, this should be on the radar screen. Like, this is something you should pay attention to. Now might be the time. It's not too late to start taking this serious. There was also a really interesting quote. He was asked by Axios about what he thought of the valuations of Silicon Valley startups, and he said that he had no understanding of how these companies are valued, which I think I can, you know, I get that. Like, a lot of people might look at the valuation of something like an Uber or a Snapchat or whatever and scratch their head a bit. But at the same time, before becoming the Treasury Secretary, he was the Chief Information Officer at Goldman Sachs. He was a former investment banker and hedge fund manager. Now, his background is in Wall Street and not necessarily tech and labor. But it seems like if you're going to be managing investments at that level and one of the top executives at Goldman Sachs, you might have some understanding of technology and its impact on, like, all of this stuff, you know, in managing these investments and planning for the future. So, this is really, like I said, dumbfounding is maybe the best word to describe how I feel on this. It's crazy.
Yeah, I think that this is a big issue that I wish someone like our Treasury Secretary understood, because it is a complicated issue. You talked about ATMs versus bank tellers, and you know, there's they didn't. It's not like, oh, we started to have ATMs and we don't have any more bank tellers. That's the example that people always use. So it's true that a lot of those bank tellers had different jobs. They moved into different jobs. It wasn't like, oh, for each bank, for each ATM, a bank teller lost his job. It's not
a one-to-one.
Yeah.
Well, in some cases, it can create new jobs. Like you said, in the long run, it might be better for us all, right? There's going to be those growing pains. And in some cases, it might create new jobs. In other cases, it might eliminate stuff altogether, right?
Right. And it might create new jobs for a certain strata of people. And that's complicated. And and I would hope that our Treasury Secretary would understand that a little better, but maybe he will learn.
We can only hope.
And exactly, yeah. I have some tech news that he needs to know. Stephen, if you're watching.
Yeah, don't tune out yet. Keep watching. Exactly. Keep watching, Steve. Keep watching.
Earlier this week, Motherboard reported that a hacker is currently holding millions of leaked iCloud credentials for ransom. And if Apple doesn't pay $75,000 in crypto, $75,000 in cryptocurrency or $100,000 worth of iTunes gift cards, these hackers will remotely wipe the data on all of these iPhones and then reset the passwords. Apple told CNET that its system has not been hacked and that the data likely came from an older third-party attack. But ZDNet said today that if you use iCloud, there is good reason to worry. These hackers seem to have some passwords that were used only for iTunes. So it's complicated whether, you know, we're not sure if maybe people had changed the other passwords, but these hackers talked to ZDNet and supplied 54 logins, and they tested them in some very complicated way that they have to know that these were real passwords.
Yeah.
And these were not like just from the LinkedIn hack necessarily. And the ZDNet reporter also said, based on his interactions with these people, they were naive and inexperienced.
Very interesting. I think this is, I mean, how many of these do we need? We're going to get them every day, but a great reminder to have a unique password for each account. And this is, you know, a good reason to use a password manager if you're not already, and turn on two-factor authentication. If you have two-factor authentication turned on, which iCloud offers, right, which Apple offers, then even if they have the password, they won't be able to log into your devices, because you'll have your phone, you'll have your laptop, it'll ask for that uniquely generated code, and they won't have access to that, right? But if you're using the same password everywhere, then they'll get into your other things. Or if you're not using two-factor authentication, then they have a key, right? So turn on two-factor authentication, don't use the same password everywhere, and you should be okay even in this situation. So that's I'll get off my soapbox there with that now. But I think this is also kind of hilarious at the same time. I don't want to patronizing here, but $100,000 worth of iTunes gift cards? Is that what you said? Can't Apple understand which iTunes account used which iTunes gift card? And I mean, okay, I'm one of those people who buys a lot of movies on iTunes. I don't know why I do. It's kind of dumb. Most of them are on Netflix. But I own 200 movies on iTunes or something ridiculous like that, right?
That is ridiculous.
I see Lady Snowblood from the Criterion Collection was on sale on iTunes, and I bought it for $10. I was stoked. Why? I don't know. But it's a great movie. But nonetheless, I couldn't spend $100,000 worth of iTunes. What are they going to do with this stuff?
Right. Yeah, because music, I mean, that's just, you know, I guess that's a lot of Apple Music subscriptions. Yeah.
It's like lifetime supply of Apple Music for you and all of your homies and all of your family and everyone. For the whole neighborhood. I don't know. Where's this? These demands are hilarious. It almost makes it seem like they just don't really expect Apple to play or what. I don't know.
Scooter X says in the chat room that the gift cards are sold on eBay and other sites. Why would you buy iTunes gift cards on eBay?
I don't know. I mean, I guess maybe if you see one it's $5 on eBay, but it's worth $10. But that still seems awfully shady, right? Mm-hmm. You know, it's just, I mean, how do you know it's even going to be legit? How do you know that the code isn't going to be accessed already? You don't really seem to have, I don't know. Or, you know, they're not going to stand on the corner on a sidewalk and be like, hey, selling iTunes, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah. I don't know. Hackers are dumb.
That's the bottom line. Hackers are dumb, used two-step authentication, and we're good. All right. Well, I'm not sure if Treasury Secretary Mnuchin is watching. You know, 50-50, I'd guess. But someone should really tell him about this as well. Robots built by a London startup called Starship Technologies are now filling a job once done by humans. They're delivering food for the startup DoorDash. These self-driving robots are shuttling around orders from restaurants in Redwood City, California, to customers within a 2-mile radius. Now, obviously, this is fairly small. 2 miles in one Silicon Valley town, city in California isn't displacing a ton of jobs or anything like that. But here is another example of our robot-dominated future. What do you think about this?
Well, you know, yeah, robots are taking over jobs that just haven't even existed for more than 5 years. It's like the DoorDash. Like, you know, yeah. It's like you can't say like, oh, I've been working for DoorDash for, you know, a decade.
Yeah, no, it's not going to fill up your LinkedIn profile.
So, yeah, it's true. I like these little robots. I think they're cute. I'm pulling for them. I understand you can't steal the food out of them because there's a special code that gets texted to you. But I really don't know why people won't just. I guess they're heavy, so you wouldn't pick them up and throw them.
Yeah, or kick them, or like the kicking take a baseball bat to it. I could see kids wanting to mess with these things as they're driving down the sidewalk, right?
Yeah. I don't want them to be kicked. That's what I'm worried about.
They remind me a lot of the mouse droids from Star Wars. They're like these tiny little box droids that deliver things. They're not nearly as big as this, but they follow folks around as they're all like in Imperial warships and stuff. They're kind of it's kind of a like you know slick, sleek looking robot. I mean, it's kind of adorable in a way too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The mouse droids. But until you pointed them out, I didn't really remember them. But I looked them up and. I mean, they were probably carrying DoorDash food and pizza and stuff too, don't you think?
I think in a galaxy far, far away, people want pizza.
Yeah, you know, yeah, so exactly. I mean, because they never, it never really was clear what they were for.
So no, they're probably, just there. Yeah, I love them.
There they are.
There you go.
That's pizza. Yeah. Chewy does not like the mouse droids.
No.
You can now buy Apple's new red iPhone and new 9.7-inch iPad. The new product red iPhone will cost you a one-time payment of $969 for the biggest version. And the largest size of the iPad will cost you between $300 and $400. If you buy the iPad from Best Buy, they will throw in a $25 gift card. So don't say I never told you anything. When I looked online, the red iPhone was available for store pickup in some places with shipping dates for next week. I couldn't find a store pickup for the new iPad, and the earliest shipping date for that was March 31st.
Yeah, March 31st isn't that far away. Pretty interesting. I mean, in some sense, I feel like everybody who wants an iPhone 7 by this point probably has one. But I feel like the longer the red is out, the more it's growing on me with that white face. At first, I saw it, I was like, wish it had the black face. But the white face of, you know, faceplate, it's kind of growing on me a little bit.
Mm. I like it. I think it is nice. And yeah, I don't know if everybody who wanted an iPhone 7 has already gotten one.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
My mom, for example, who I've told you about before.
Yes, yes.
She just got one. So
hi, Megan's mom, by the way, if she's watching. She sounds awesome.
She is awesome. Yeah. But yeah, so I guess there might be some people too that feel strongly about the AIDS research that the money goes to. And they were like, oh, I didn't think that I needed to get an iPhone 7. Like, I didn't want to do that for myself. But if some of this money is going to Project Red, then, you know, I will get it. Or, you know, just people like to have the product Red to look like they care, even if they don't.
Yeah. I've always bought the phone cases and the Apple Watch bands and stuff that were Project Red. But, you know, it was just as much for like the good cause as I just like the color red. Mm-hmm. I just thought the stuff looked fly. So I feel like we need to see this in person, though, to really get a good feel. Because that, you know, oftentimes, whether it's a car or it's a phone or a T-shirt or whatever, you know, red's a shade that you really got to see in person. Like pictures on the internet never quite capture it the way that I think it fully is. So, well, Google and Howard University have teamed up to create what's being called Howard West, a small computer science summer program inside of Google's Mountain View headquarters that's focused on training students of color for jobs in Silicon Valley. 25 to 30 juniors and seniors from Howard, a historically black university, will spend 12 weeks at Google this summer, receiving instruction from senior Google engineers and Howard faculty while also getting course credit. At Google, African Americans make up just 1% of the workforce. So clearly, the company's hiring efforts haven't necessarily produced a very diverse workforce. And a couple dozen students won't necessarily radically change things here overnight, but this does seem to me to be like a genuine attempt on Google's part to build some kind of a pool of engineers that they can later hire. And, well, I mean, I'm hoping that some other tech companies will be able to tap into and compete for as well. But what do you think here? Is this actually like, you know, backing up rhetoric and saying, yeah, we believe in diversity, never seeing those numbers necessarily go up, but here's a final step? Or is this more lip service?
Well, I hope it sounds like a great project. And, you know, props to Google and also to Howard. I mean, Howard's providing the housing and expenses.
Yeah.
Howard and some private donors. So thanks to them, too. I think, you know, after I was reading about this, I think this is going to be great for these Howard students. I also think it's going to be great for employees at Google, because I think when you're just surrounded by people that look like you all the time, it's difficult to get over the unconscious bias that you have. So I'm happy. I think it will help both sides. And that, you know, it's a small amount of attendees in the beginning, but if it works, they'll increase the amount of attendees. And yeah, I think it's I can only see positives out of this. Bonita Stewart, she's the VP of Global Partnership, who made the announcement today. Mm-hmm. She was a Howard grad. She said, "The spirit of total possibility put me on my path to Harvard Business School and ultimately to Google." So I think this is exciting.
That's awesome. Yeah, I when I was a student, I was in a thing called the New York Times Student Journalism Institute, and it was for members of the National Association of Hispanic Journalists and the National Association of Black Journalists and Students, and it was literally like a couple dozen students, and we got to work for about like a week in kind of like a journalism boot camp, and not only for myself, but lots of other folks, that was kind of like a springboard into all sorts of journalism jobs, not just at the New York Times, but all sorts of other places, because obviously I don't work there now, but that's kind of what I'm hoping here, is that this can not just help Google, but it can also help, you know, all these other companies. Because it seems like there isn't a single tech company that I can think of that doesn't have really extraordinarily lame diversity numbers, on whether it's across race or gender lines. But there are 107 historically black colleges and universities, HBCUs, in the country. And there are lots of students of color at other universities as well. So this is still a pretty narrow program, but I'm excited to kind of see where it goes. Getting, you know, give Google little props for creating it, even though Howard's footing the bill, as you rightfully mentioned out.
Yeah, I think I like the idea, and I like that it's a group too. I think there's been a lot of research, because I think early on, when, you know, people would get minorities would get scholarships to colleges and then not do well, not succeed, it was often because they were alone, and there wasn't anyone like them there. It had nothing to do with their ability to succeed. It was, and so now I think that over time, programs have learned that, and they've found that like mentoring programs are good. Having a group of students together so that you can, you know, be together when you are different than everyone that's there. So I like this idea, and I hope for more.
Yeah. It'd be nice to see it go year round and not just a summer program, but we'll see. Got to start somewhere.
After the break, Sam Moscovich from Ars Technica is here to tell us what it's like to hold a tiny Buzz Aldrin in his hands. But first, let's take a minute to thank Quicken Loans, the sponsor of this episode. Getting a mortgage is frustrating. It takes a lot of time. You're running all over town. You're signing papers. Basically, you're getting up off the couch, which a lot of us don't like to do unless we have to. And you don't have to. When it comes to the big decision of choosing a mortgage lender, it's important to work with someone who you can trust, who has your best interests in mind, and who lets you do things online like you like to. With Rocket Mortgage, you'll get a transparent online process that gives you the confidence to make an informed decision. So you don't have to waste all that time searching through stacks of paperwork. With Rocket Mortgage, you can securely share your financial information to get a mortgage approval in just minutes. So you're not waiting around. You don't have the commuting time back and forth to the mortgage broker's office. It takes just a few minutes. You can adjust the rate and the length of your loan in real time to see all the different factors, how long you're going to take to pay off that loan, how much you're going to pay every month. You can adjust all that and find a solution that's right for you. So whether you're looking to buy a home or refinance your existing mortgage, you can lift the burden of getting a home loan with Rocket Mortgage. Skip the bank, skip the waiting, and go completely online at quickenloans.com/TNT. That's quickenloans.com/TNT. Don't forget to end it with the TNT so that they know that we sent you there. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states. NMLS, consumeraccess.org, number 3030. And we thank Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans for their support. Sam Skovich from Ars Technica is back from South by Southwest in Austin, and he's here to tell us some of what he saw, including a documentary in virtual reality. Welcome back, Sam.
It's good to see everybody in the in the Twit world. I'm kind of mixed up. I've been playing a lot of Nintendo Switch lately, so I forget what people look like. So it's good to see you again. But yes, and speaking of seeing people in weird ways, yes, I saw a lot of really cool stuff while I was at South by Southwest. I met some officers from the CIA. I met Bill Nye. I saw an Edgar Wright movie, all kinds of fun stuff. But I think the most intriguing thing I saw was a virtual reality documentary that employed something called volumetric capture. Now, many different people, many different companies have tried this trick before, and 8i is not the first necessarily to do so, but 8i was the first to come to me and say, hey, Sam, do you want to put little Buzz Aldrin in your hands? And I said, sure. So they invited me to a demo of Buzz Aldrin talking about his desired missions to Mars that would put up settlements, human settlements on Mars and on moons surrounding it. He's got a 20-30 year plan in mind about this that requires things such as solar sailing. It's very fascinating. But I was more interested when I was in virtual reality with him as he was showing me these Mars things. And I thought, I'm right next to Buzz Aldrin. How did you guys do that? And they explained a volumetric capture process. And then they said, well, we can just show you. Let me put him in your hand. And they had me stand and held up a cell phone and put him in augmented reality next to me so that I had little Buzz Aldrin in my hand. I'm sure there's a photo of it over at Ars Technica that you guys could load. But that was not quite the coolest thing. There he is. There, if anybody who's watched this can see little Buzz. He's my little Pokemon Buzz. But I will say what was really cool was a couple days later, I was introduced to a short 8-minute documentary called After Solitary. This was not as fun or lighthearted as Buzz in my hands. This was about a man who had been in solitary confinement on and off about 5.5 years total that he was in the tiny room that the webcast viewers can see right now. And virtual reality is used to put yourself in the room. You are essentially his cellmate in his tiny solitary confinement chamber because the HTC Vive, that's the VR set that you can kind of walk around with. They set it up in this so that you're in there with him and they are constantly restitching how he looks. So he truly does appear like he's next to you, three-dimensionally. Look above, look below, look all around. And this man is there. You can see his neck tattoos, his finger tattoos, the looks on his face, his whole build. It really gives you a sense of scale for when you're in his cell with him as he tells these deplorable, terrible stories. I think documentary filmmaking is at its best when it lets the setting and the people tell a story more than these sort of pound you in the head sort of social statements. And I think what this film does about the state of American prisons is way more interesting to me than anything else I've seen. And I've seen a lot of these NBC weekend specials about bad prisons. This is tops them all. So I really do think volumetric rendering in VR is the future because it does make people really seem like they're there in a way that I have not seen with polygons or other tricks.
Are the films that you saw, were they specific to South by Southwest, like as tech demos, or are they available to Vive and maybe even Oculus or anyone else owners?
So they're going to get wider release. I'm not sure exactly when. South by Southwest tends to be a place where filmmakers go to show off smaller projects that may be picked up elsewhere. I'm not sure that this is necessarily going to be published to just download from the Steam store or from Oculus store. Mm-hmm. I know that there should be something coming at some point. It ran on a normal consumer level VR machine, which is pretty powerful, but you can buy those for the home. You don't need to have a magical rig. It worked with a consumer computer and an HTC Vive. And there are a bunch of other documentaries and experimental films in the virtual reality part of South by Southwest. The one I just talked about, After Solitary, did win South by Southwest's best documentary VR award. It didn't have a really good name. So, I imagine it'll be coming out at some point, but definitely better than just sticking on cardboard. I think getting a true virtual reality experience with that one, totally worth it.
All right. Well, from movies on the VR screen to movies on the big traditional screen in front of you, I wanted to ask you about Power Rangers. That movie comes out this Friday, and you had a great write-up on the film. I'd love to hear your thoughts about this.
Yeah, that it debuted today, or I guess last night. They have the kind of thing where you can go to midnight screenings. Apparently, it did pretty well. It's already beating Life, which is the other movie that came out today that's got sort of a Ridley Scott, Jake Gyllenhaal sort of thing going on. But Power Rangers is doing better. It is a better film of the two, but not by much. It starts out in a really interesting way in that it doesn't feel exactly like the TV show. There is some lighthearted cheese, but the teen actors are really... really on top of their game. Whoever cast this movie, with the five kids they picked out to play your red, blue, black, yellow, and pink Rangers, they all crisscross in a really interesting way. It actually, there's a little bit of Breakfast Club to it, but I would say more Goonies, as in you've got kids who are all going through their own childhood issues coming together for an adventure. And that's what you get here. You get these kids developing their own characters, their own issues with parents, coming together, fighting a little bit, ultimately realizing they have superpowers and really having fun with each other as they realize what they are. And that's the first 45 minutes. And then it becomes a Power Rangers movie in that it's rushing to a conclusion. These kids have to become buddies if they're going to save the world, because Morphin, if you didn't know, requires true friendship and bond. So that's when the movie starts.
I did not know that.
No, I didn't either. I apologize to all the Super Power Rangers fans out there. I'm not the best fan of it. But it starts to tumble. And that's when Bryan Cranston and Elizabeth Banks show up. And that's surprising because they're perfectly fine. But they're written in very boring ways that don't fit with the tone that's established at the beginning. By the end, they would be very good in a real episode of Power Rangers, of this show that's been on cut. 20, 22, 25 years, something ridiculous like that.
Yeah, long time.
So I enjoyed the beginning of it. I felt like it really petered out by the end with some weak special effects and a really boring ending battle. They're definitely setting up for more sequels. And I hope that they kind of stick with the good stuff if they do another one of them. So, you know, if you like the first 45 minutes and then have something else to do after that, that might not be bad. But as a full movie, kind of, yeah.
All right, so what should we spend our money on this weekend? Power Rangers or Life, or I think there's like a new Chips movie too, right?
I mean, I still think everyone should see the last 5 minutes of Kong Skull Island. Get Out is also, you know, a darned good movie.
So good.
I just saw Colossal, which is not out yet. That comes out in a couple weeks, and that stars Anne Hathaway, and I'll talk about that when that one comes out, but... mark your calendar for April 11th for that one.
Awesome. Well, many consider the 8-bit DuckTales Nintendo game to be a classic. It actually inspired us some of the moves from the game Shovel Knight, which I love and I'm playing on the Switch right now. But now it's back in a collection of retro games called the Disney Afternoon Collection. You also had a story about this recently, Sam. What consoles is this available on, and is it worth picking up or not?
So it's not out yet. It'll be out in a few weeks, coming out for Windows computers on Steam, Xbox One and PlayStation 4, which I already know what you're going to ask. No, they have not announced it for the Switch yet.
But don't we want it for the Switch? I think this is perfect for the Switch.
I mean, you can go ahead and give Capcom and Nintendo and all their other buddies a call about that one.
Please
I think it
do.
Certainly fits. But what's interesting is these guys who worked on this one specifically, I'm blanking on the name. I want to say Digital Eclipse. This is a team of guys who are led by Frank Cifaldi, who is a retro game archivist.
Yeah, these are the same guys who did the Mega Man collection, right?
Correct. There was a Mega Man collection that Capcom released that was pixel perfect, that really understood, okay, we want to take this NES game. If you slap it into a newer system the wrong way, the colors can be wrong. The music can be wrong. The way the pixels come out can be wrong. The glitchy stuff from the originals might be wrong. This stuff requires a much steadier hand than you might expect. And the guys at Digital Eclipse really nail it. And that's why they were handed this collection of Disney-licensed Capcom games. Not every game that Capcom did with a Disney license was good. The Little Mermaid... Mickey Mouse Capade? No. I mean, I liked The Little Mermaid as a movie. The game just did not quite cut it. But the five games that are included here are the ones that all were based on afternoon cartoon sort of stuff that they would air all the time.
So Darkwing Duck, Chip and Dale Rescue Rangers, there's Gold here.
Yeah, there's six of them in all. Yeah, there's two DuckTales, two Rescue Rangers, Tailspin. There's no Gummy Bears Adventure. They never made that one. They should have. I still think that would have been good. But, you know, they're going to get that, woo! But that'll be out soon. An affordable price. I want to say $15 or $20. They're going to have extra. The rewind button because they're very hard games now.
They are.
Much harder. I'm 35, so I was a much younger person with a lot more spare time to do the same jump over and over and over. Don't have that anymore. I'll pay the money. Give me the rewind button. Let me try again. Thank you. So I look forward to that.
Awesome. Awesome.
All right. So the last piece of gaming news is sad news, I think. GameStop is closing 150 stores. Sales are going down. Is that just people buying in stores, or what does this mean for the gaming industry as a whole?
Well, what's interesting about the store closures is that GameStop was trying to pivot. They understood that things were changing. They saw digital downloads on the horizon. They bought up some companies. They tried to buy, years ago, they tried to buy a Steam competitor and make that work. Didn't work. They bought Kongregate. That starts with a K. It's a online flash game portal. I don't think they're really making money from that. And they also put a lot of money into Cricket, which are these cell phone shops. And sometimes they've just turned GameStops into Crickets or combined them, and they get into buying old phones and reselling those. So they've been trying to shift, but ultimately GameStop was making a lot of money from used games. And these closures are a big sign that games are not being resold. Publishers made a big stand about going, all right, we're going to be selling expansion packs and season passes and extra stuff that keeps you coming back to the disc you might have bought. They don't want you selling that disc back. They want you to hold on to it and then come back and spend $10 or $15 later. And people are doing that. Between that and digital downloads, GameStop is running out of opportunities to take our money as gamers. That being said, they have sold a lot of the Nintendo Switch. And they're really crowing about that. They shouted that out in a big way when they announced all this stuff because they want to sound like they're doing well. And I don't know if they're selling the most Nintendo Switches of anybody, but they're definitely poised to be the ones to say, yeah, we can barely keep it in stock. They're calling it Wii-like sales potential through the end of this year at least. I'm not shocked because people are really loving the system. But again, plenty of other places to buy it. Best Buy and Amazon both have competitive offers for games that attach to the system. So you're more likely nowadays to find someone going, oh, I get that extra percentage off if I'm a Best Buy Rewards member or an Amazon Prime member. So GameStop really missed out on that boat too. Their power-up rewards I don't think are nearly as good because the power-up rewards are for used games.
Yep.
So.
Yeah, it really seems like if you've been to a GameStop recently, and I have, it's almost like you're walking into like a Spencer's Gifts that's like themed for video games. There's like t-shirts and mugs and toys and all these sorts of things. And interestingly enough, with the Switch and their little amiibo toys that you like use an NFC chip and can touch the controller and get you special things in a game that you can't otherwise get, there might be some opportunity there for GameStop. But, you know, this is a pivot that's going to take time, right, Sam? And I wonder if with the decline in used game sales and a slower, maybe growing side of accessories and stuff, do you think it's enough for them to hold on, or are we just going to see more and more of this from GameStop?
Well, the toy-to-game thing totally tanked. I mean, Amiibo is kind of holding on, but if you go into most of these shops, you'll see a lot of the unpopular characters piling up. You know, there were a few that were rare and then not so much. And Skylanders has sort of fallen off. Disney Infinity, that went away.
Yeah, they killed that, right? Disney is not doing it anymore. Yeah.
So I also think GameStop thought, oh, that might be a shot. But, you know, it's the big extra peripherals aren't really a thing that's driving people in stores. This isn't the Guitar Hero days. And I really do think that their best bet would honestly be into becoming a total Android reseller. There's so many Android phones that get upgraded and sold and traded in. And I honestly think that they would be smart to just go, all right, we're full on cell phone resellers. We're going to take them, repair them, resell them, and be amazing at that and lock into the fact that people tend to use that. The people, more cell phone people than games people. I think that would be a smart move just in terms of used product volume. But I don't see them making that giant pivot yet. And I think that we might by, you know, end of 2018. They've got some time. They're not broke.
One last question. Nate was talking about a game called Everything, where you can play as anything, a blade of grass. And so I reached out to you. You said you had played it. What are your thoughts?
Hold on. This is an existential dance that is going to answer that question. Because Everything is a game. Don't let the camera go away from this. This is important. Everything is a strange experience in which you don't really have an ending. It's about philosophical commentary and shrinking and growing into stuff. At one point, you become so molecular that you end up turning into a cosmic star. Like, you go from the molecular level to the astrological level. And then just start to really ask yourself, what am I? Who am I? Where are you? What is Twit? You know, it's just a lot of important questions.
Are we allowed to go away from you on the camera yet?
Correct.
Okay.
I feel like we're in Wayne's World where it goes like, you know, and they just like start moving themselves around.
But yeah, it's a trippy experimental thing. It was made by David O'Reilly.
Look at that. What is going on?
Yeah, everything moves around in this very stilted way. He made a project called Mountain, which is I can't remember if it was on computer. I know it was on phones, and you would just
leave it open. Yeah.
And a mountain would just build itself, and it would take its sweet time. It was just designed to be this sort of kind of interactive thing that mused on an existential question. And this triple, quadruple, quintuples that sort of proposition. It's a beautiful thing to trip out on. You can just let it play itself, and you can sort of guide how it plays itself. And you live in a state like Washington or Oregon or others that have legalized certain products, and you just want to put the controller down and let it play itself and enjoy the sights in a special way, you can do that. I might have done that. It might have been amazing.
This looks like an acid trip for sure. It's like those cows were gymnasts, and they're just doing those flips nonstop. Like, they're just never going to end.
You've got nothing until you've got paramecium doing dances. That's the real stuff.
Yeah. What happened back in my day, it was just a screensaver. That's all you needed.
You blazed out to the After Dark Toasters? Is that
no,
what you're saying?
I didn't.
She admits to nothing.
No. Well, Sam, as always, exciting. Never know what to expect with you. All of Sam's work can be found at Ars Technica. He can be found at Sam Red or in his house using the Switch. Is the Switch mostly an in-home tool for you? Are you taking it to bars and parties as you planned to from the promotion?
I've got it right here. I have it. I have the case right here. It's got the little Switch logo.
Yeah, I got the same case. Yeah.
It truly and honestly comes with me everywhere. It's been really fun. I introduced my 10 and 8-year-old nephews to Bomberman with it by just putting the screen down and each of us having a little Joy-Con. I mean, I'm a 35-year-old. I don't have people over for play dates anymore. If I want to do video games with friends, this is one of the best ways to do it. I swear there's a Switch in here. I'm not fooling around.
When the Switch launched on the Saturday after, I got together with like five of my other friends who also bought a Switch, and we literally had like a Switch play date. We didn't call it that, of course. But like, everybody sat around with their Switch, and yeah, there was some of that happening.
Shh, we're gonna sleep now.
All right.
All right, Sam.
See you soon.
All right. That was great. Yeah. That was great.
We have some feedback.
We do have some feedback. Renard wrote us about our discussion the other day about whether or not access to the internet should or could be considered a human right, maybe something, at least a utility on the level with water and heat and electricity and all these sorts of things. And he said, quote, "One of the reasons it should be a human right isn't about decreasing the importance of other things like water and electricity. It's about increasing the standards that we expect as people. Daily tasks that those with access to the internet take for granted have become increasingly impossible without the internet. Forget the luxuries, necessities, and that also require access." End quote. And I think he's right. I think there has been a shift, over the last couple decades. Where the internet used to be maybe a fun thing to go and play with, something for nerds and geeks, and now it is fueling the sorts of things we take for granted. And that might be watching television and access to the news. That might be applying for a job. That might be, you know, getting a mortgage or buying a car and all sorts of things. And the indispensability of it really seems to be growing day by day. So I really, really appreciated that bit of feedback there.
And TNT's fan of the day is Soren Madsen, who watches Tech News Today while making basil tomatoes, which look delicious.
Yeah.
It looks like the skin was peeled off that tomato. It's amazing. Show us how you watch or listen to TNT, whether or not you have beautiful pictures of food to go along. Record a video, take a picture of yourself or your setup, post it on Instagram, Google Plus, Twitter, or Facebook. Use the hashtag HowIWatchTNT, and we are going to find it.
All right. Well, for our final story of the day, Elon Musk tweeted today about the first release candidate of the Model 3. This is basically like a final prototype just before the production cars are ready to go. He also tried to clear up a bit of confusion about the name. Now, people were asking, since it's called the Model 3, is this going to be like the third? Is it going to replace some of the pre-existing Teslas? We're only going to have one, kind of like the iPhones. And he said, no, it's not 1, 2, 3 in a sequence like iPhone models, but as in Model 3, like the BMW 3 Series. So it's like literally the name of the car. Part of what he was getting at here, too, though, was there was the Model S, then the Model X. So the Model S sedan, the Model X, which was the SUV. He wanted to call this originally the Model E, but Ford sued because that was the name of one of their trucks back in the 1930s. And then the next model was going to be the Model Y. So he's trying to be cute. He was trying to say, spell it sexy, which, you know, is that a bit childish to like, you know, have your car company line to spell out sex and eventually sexy?
Yeah.
Yeah. And since he couldn't use E, he used 3, which oddly enough fits into like perfect like text messaging emoji speak, right, with 3 in place of the E.
Yeah.
So he didn't give up on his hopes and dreams of sexy Tesla there. That's still happening.
Right. And I guess there were some headlines that we saw that said that he wasn't going to drive it, or he wasn't going to ride in it, but then I never, we looked through that, couldn't,
we weren't able to find those tweets ourselves. Yeah. So if you find those, tweet those at Megan and I, because we want to see that. But it would be interesting that you know, if the car is at this point, it's driving, it's operable, it's, you know, close to being ready for production, that he wouldn't necessarily drive it himself. If that was the case, that's kind of a bit of a head scratcher. Mm-hmm. I know it's you know, relatively inexpensive, should be going for like $30,000-$35,000 a year, but you know, hey, this is his car. He shouldn't be too good to get in it, mm-hmm, into the driver's seat. So I wonder what's up behind that.
Yeah, I do too. Well, Nate, you're going to be on the show at least a few more days, yep, next week. And then Jason will be back, and you'll be on Twit on Sunday.
Yeah, I'll be on Twit on Sunday. Jason's coming back next week. I'll be filling in a couple days more. And then you're going to get Jason back as usual. And then I will be on the new Screensavers every other Saturday starting mid-April.
Awesome.
Yeah. Well, TNT records live every Monday through Friday at 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern, 2300 UTC at twit.tv/live. You can be a part of the show by emailing us at tnt@twit.tv or leaving us a short voicemail at 260-TNT-SHOW, S-H-O-W.
And find all the ways to subscribe to our show at twit.tv/TNT. And if you want to tweet at me, I am at Megan Maroney.
I'm at Nate OG. And thanks to our technical director, Anthony, Mario for helping in the studio, taking the place of Burke today, and Kevin for editing the show. And thanks to all of you for talking tech with us today. And we will see you Monday. Yeah.